From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Nopa.
I'm from Pittsburgh.
I live in Ingleside.
I live in Sausalito.
I live in the East Bay, Hercules, California, USA, planet Earth.
Coming up, checking a box on an application can keep you from getting a job, and what some Bay Area cities are doing to change that.
It's not about what we've done in our past, but what we do now to better our future.
Then we'll talk to funny man Mal Sharp about why San Francisco is the perfect city for pranksters.
Somehow we got in this conversation with this pharmacist. My partner Jim wanted to perform an operation on me. He wanted to cut open my chest and look into my heart. And we wanted to get some surgical implements. And what did he have for sale there?
And we'll learn about the benefits of an ancient Chinese practice.
First thing you go over there, you relax already. And then you forget about your problem.
That's today on Cross Currents. When you fill out a job application, you're expected to answer some basic questions, things like your employment experience, education history, and references. In many cases, you also have to check a box to declare whether you've ever been convicted of a crime. But in places like San Francisco, Berkeley, and Richmond, that question is no longer fair game. Yesterday, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors extended its 2006 Ban the Box legislation. It's part of a national trend to end discrimination in hiring for ex-cons. Last year, the state of California barred the question entirely from public employment applications. In fact, 10 states and more than 50 cities and counties have enacted some form of Ban the Box laws. The city of Richmond passed its Ban the Box ordinance in 2011, forbidding government employees from asking job applicants about their criminal histories. That city is now expanding its law, making it one of the most far-reaching in the country. As KALW's Kyungjin Lee reports, now, private employers with city contracts will no longer be able to ask applicants about criminal pasts.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. First of all,
it's graduation day for Michelle Walker. She cycled through jails and prisons for a third of her life. But now, the 31-year-old is ready to change things for good. She just completed an intensive two-week course on financial education and career management, organized by a local group that supports low-income people.
I would like to thank my parents, because without them, I wouldn't be here. Then
Walker looks sharp in a white button-up shirt tucked into black slacks. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of her life.
You know, I just like to say that it's not about what we've done in our past, but what we do now to better our futures.
Walker hasn't had an easy life. Born and raised in Richmond, she became a foster kid at age 6 and says she started making bad choices as she got older. She was 16 when she was first incarcerated for assault.
I definitely feel that it was a protection of myself and a defense, but, you know, like, two minors, we both got in trouble, and I was more rebellious, so I got confined for it.
Since then, she's been in and out of jails a handful of times. After her last stint in prison a few years ago, Walker says she's tried to make a better life for her 4-year-old son. She held down a steady housekeeping job in Arizona for 2 years, but recently moved back to Richmond.
A lot of different cashier, warehouse. I did a warehouse assembly, so I've applied at a couple of warehouse construction. I'm trying to see if they need any kind of carpentry work. I've been applying for a lot.
But finding work with a rap sheet isn't easy. In 2011, a local advocacy group for formerly incarcerated people found that more than two-thirds of Richmond's residents with a criminal history are unemployed.
People who have been to prison are faced with nearly insurmountable obstacles in returning to society in terms of earning a living and supporting their family.
Jesse Stout is the policy director for Legal Services for Prisoners with Children. His organization has led the campaign to ban the box nationwide. The idea is to prohibit questions about criminal convictions from job applications. Ban the box policies are growing in cities including Chicago and New York, as well as San Francisco, Oakland, and Berkeley. But Stout says Richmond stands out. The reason is that Richmond doesn't just prohibit city employers from asking about criminal histories. Now, private businesses that contract with the city can't ask either, ever.
Other than those that are specifically required to by state or federal law.
The exempted jobs include police officers, teachers, and other sensitive positions where people have to handle large amounts of cash or private information. Richmond Councilwoman Jovanka Beckles sponsored the ordinance last year. During a council meeting to vote on the measure, she spoke about a man she'd known for 20 years who applied for a job helping children with mental health issues. Beckles didn't even know he had once been incarcerated.
Most honest man I know. Came in there wanting to do an internship, was denied because he committed a crime that had nothing to do with children. But the fact that he had a record disqualified him, and that's not fair. He should have been given an opportunity to sit down. He should have been given an opportunity to show and prove himself.
Michelle Walker got that opportunity. After her training course, she found work as a landscaper. But many private businesses in Richmond are not pleased with the new law.
We have some business people in there say, well, no, I would totally not go for it. In no way I want to know who I'm hiring.
Michael Davenport is the board chair for Richmond's Chamber of Commerce. He says about three quarters of the chamber's membership did not support the measure. But the group didn't take a formal position. Davenport, who runs a private security and limo business, points out that most private employers aren't affected at all.
I mean, when someone fills the application, you interview them, you can say, okay, I'd like to hire this person. But you have all the information there, so you can do a background check before you call them in.
Legally, it's not okay to have a blanket policy against hiring people with a criminal background. But it's a hard law to enforce, especially for small businesses. And that's why Ban the Box advocates in Richmond and across the Bay in San Francisco insist on more protective laws. In fact, San Francisco passed the nation's first Ban the Box law a decade ago. We're in front of San Francisco's main branch library during Cheryl Smith's lunch break. We're using a pseudonym because she feels like she's stigmatized when people find out about her past. She tried unsuccessfully to find work for a couple of years due to a theft-related felony conviction in 2008.
When they found out about my conviction, some, you know, blatantly told me before they even ran my criminal history that because I had a felony conviction that I wasn't going to be able to work with them. Some gave me the justice of at least running my conviction and then told me that they would have to deny me employment. And those were the times I was lucky enough to even be interviewed.
She eventually connected with Goodwill Industries and proved herself to be an outstanding worker. She was specially selected by the company to interview for a job with the city and county of San Francisco.
But only guaranteed the first interview. You had to earn everything after that.
She believes when she can bring up her criminal record in person, she still has a chance to get the job.
I felt like they more understood that it's not that black and white. I went through all my interview process and they got to know me for my work ethic. I got to display the experience I had and the skill that I would bring to the table before that ever even came up.
San Francisco Board Supervisor Jane Kim wants to take it further.
What this is really about is about giving people a fair opportunity to work and for housing for those that want to work and want access to housing.
She and fellow supervisor Malia Cohen have introduced what they call the Fair Chance Ordinance, a policy that would make city contractors, many private companies, and public housing providers wait to ask about criminal backgrounds until after an interview. Cohen says,
we're not asking employers and housing providers to give them a preference, let's be clear, but we are asking them to not automatically disqualify someone solely based on a conviction history.
The full board passed the resolution yesterday. As San Francisco and Richmond continue to expand protections for this constituency, California will begin to enforce its own version of Ban the Box in July, which will require state and local agencies to postpone background checks until later in the hiring process. For Cross Currents, I'm Kyungjin Lee.
That piece was co-reported by Charlotte Silver. We want to know what you think about Ban the Box. Do you think more cities should do away with the question about criminal past? Or does an employer have a right to know? You can share your thoughts by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message. And if you are an employer, what do you think? Leave us a message at 415-264-7106.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Once a year, San Francisco becomes a magnet for comedians from all over the country. It's SF Sketchfest, and it's happening right now. Part of this year's festival includes a tribute to a local comedy team that pioneered improvisational comedy right here on the streets of San Francisco. In the 1960s, Jim Coyle and Mal Sharp staged pranks on unsuspecting citizens and tourists. Using hidden microphones, they recorded these absurd and often surreal encounters, which were broadcast on their radio show Coyle and Sharp on the Loose. Well, Jim Coyle passed away over 20 years ago. Mal Sharp has continued on in the entertainment business, playing trombone and hosting a jazz show on KCSM. And today he's talking comedy, sharing his favorite man-on-the-street moments with our own Ben Trefney.
Well, years ago, my partner and I, Jim Coyle, wandered up into the Excelsior District in San Francisco. And we had our hidden tape recorder and went into this drugstore. And there was a guy at the end of the counter there. And I put the briefcase down on the counter in front of him.
Hi, sir. Hi there. Here in your drugstore, do you have anything that we can use to sterilize?
What do you want to sterilize?
Operating equipment. Let me just say this right away. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to perform an operation, or what you'd call an operation, on this man. I think I read enough about the thing that I can do it.
And somehow we got in this conversation with this pharmacist. And we wanted him, that my partner Jim wanted to perform an operation on me. He wanted to cut open my chest and look into my heart. And we wanted to get some surgical implements. And what did he have for sale there that day? And this guy turned out to be one of the nicest guys. I mean, he just pleaded with us that this was a crazy thing to do, you know, despite the fact that Coyle told him he had gone to high school for 3 years. He had completed 3 years of high school and had studied some medical book for 3 days or something like that, and we could do it. And I remember the pharmacist says, well, you know.
For 2 days, doctors go to medical school for 4 full years.
Yeah, but they're going to operate on the whole human body. Many.
What's the difference?
This is just one little thing I have a fan of.
The body is connected.
Can I just? And it was just a wonderful about 15 minutes of us trying to buy the equipment. We told them we were going to do the operation around the corner in a station wagon, around the corner from the little pharmacy. He pleaded with us not to do it. I don't know. I can just remember that day vividly. And then we would go out. We left the little drugstore, and we would walk up the street and sit down in an alley or something and rewind. You had to rewind this thing by hand, a Mohawk tape recorder, and then listen to Monroe Mendelson. That was the guy's name, the pharmacist. Listen to him yelling
about
at us.
Some antiseptic powder.
I won't advise you. I won't even mislead you or lead you. One
bandages?
I won't do a thing for you.
Aspirin?
I'm against it.
If we get the station wagon across the street and if anything comes up,
I'm against this.
I'm just coming to tell you?
I'm against this. If you're across the street, I'll call the police.
Really?
We get some
calls. So that's the voice of Monroe Mendelson in conversation with Mal Sharp and Jim Coyle as part of Coyle and Sharp's Man on the Street interviews. So what inspired you to do these Man on the Street interviews in the first place?
Well, I met this guy Coyle in a what they had in San Francisco, and then were these sort of boarding houses. They call them residence clubs. And there was a guy sitting at the table one day with a couple of girls. We were sitting there having supper, and he was telling them how, although he looked young, he was a veteran of the Spanish Civil War, and he was involved in some kind of scientific project to regress his age, and they would go out on rocks in the headlands and lie on these rocks. And he's going through this whole thing, and these girls were just amazed.
Oh, yeah, because he's like a cross between Ernest Hemingway, Allen Ginsberg, and Albert Einstein.
Yeah, something. And I'm going, there's something going on here. So I winded up, and I spotted him in his room, and I said, what was that all about? You know, and it turned out he was just putting them on. And he just could not help himself. This guy, Coyle, had a brilliant mind, and he was an obsessive, you know, person to do this, these sort of pranks. But so I started out hanging with him. He would turn his shirt collar on backwards and pose as a priest, and we'd get in movies for free and stuff like that. And finally, we decided just to record some of these things. We went down to Brooks Camera in downtown San Francisco, where all the private eyes hung out, and they set us up. They had recording devices with a little hidden tape recorder. And we put it in a briefcase. And we started walking around San Francisco just pulling all this, these things, you know.
Tell me about one of the early ones that you did with Jim Coyle. One of the first pranks that you pulled with that recorder in the suitcase.
Well, we went, this was over near on California Street, out of California Street. I remember we walked into a big garage.
We have a few vehicles, actually, that we'd like somebody with some mechanical skill to do some work on.
There was a mechanic working in there. And we told him that some uncle of ours had this big compound in Pacific Heights. And he had cut us off. He had cut us out of the will. And we had some armored vehicles that we wanted to mount some machine guns on.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I don't normally do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll pay and so on. And another aspect of it is, probably by the end of the week we'd want it.
You want it done by the end of the week?
Yeah, we have 15 vehicles.
15 vehicles?
Yeah. Yes.
And you want these guns mounted on there?
Yeah, they're not heavy cannons like you see in a tank. We have some machine guns, 50 caliber.
I mean, bear in mind, now this stuff sounds like it could happen, right?
You know? Yeah. He would call the cops.
What?
He would probably call the cops.
Today?
Yeah.
But we said we had these vehicles, you know, and we wanted to bring them in, these armored vehicles, and we just wanted these things mounted on them because we were going to attack this compound in Pacific Heights. And we got into some big elaborate discussion with him about, you know, that he could go with us. You know, he could be a commander in our battalion, you know, because he could, if any of our tanks got disabled, he could hop out and crawl under and repair them, you know, during the armored attack.
Good strategy.
Yeah, and all this sort of thing.
Come on, Paul, there must be more to this than what I know, isn't there?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, I don't know. It just don't seem logical that you would pick me or my place of business to do this sort of stuff.
Well, you have a large place. You have room for troops to mass. Yeah, could I ask you this? I know you're a little hesitant about it.
Well, sure. I mean, the more I hear about it, then naturally I'm getting involved in something I don't know anything about.
Why?
I don't know. I mean,
what about it?
If something seems illegal here, I don't know what.
And what seems illegal?
I, not being an attorney, just being an ordinary common layman mechanic, I couldn't tell you.
What seems?
Well, I'm pretty sure that if I took a machine gun and mounted it on that car there and went down Geary Street, I'd have every cop on my tail.
So when you think back to the days working with Jim, walking the streets, getting these men on the street interviews in San Francisco, what do you think of most fondly back then?
I think of sunny days. I think of doing these really wild things. It was so satisfying, you know. I think of, you know, getting up in the morning, meeting Coyle in a coffee shop. We would premise, kind of come up with ideas, you know, see a streetlight outside the coffee shop and write down a word like human. You could be a human lamppost, you know, or something like that. And we'd write down 20 or 30 of these ideas and then walk out into San Francisco, you know, where we go today, Market Street, you know, the produce district, let's go to the Excelsior, you know. It was very free and easy. Every once in a while, someone would call the cops on us. We'd have to run and get on the streetcar. You know, there was always a little element of danger in what we were doing. And it was just fun. I found Jim a very engaging and intelligent guy, a total maniac. If you've ever seen any film of him, the minute you see him, you can see how crazy he is, even though he's conventional looking. Sort of a bit like you, Ben.
You know. Oh, you have no idea.
Well, that's the story, you know. Yeah.
That's comedian and radio legend Mal Sharp speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. There's a tribute to Sharp's work with Jim Coyle this Sunday afternoon at San Francisco's Eureka Theater. You can find more information about that and SF Sketchfest at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Mal Sharp isn't the only one who talks to strangers. Our community storytelling project Hear Hear does it all the time, just without the pranking part. Recently, we met Aster Lee at the Visitation Valley Library Branch, where she told us about how the art of Tai Chi helped create a sense of community for recent immigrants to the neighborhood.
A lot of people, they don't speak the language. Come over here, they kind of like lonely. And some people getting, fear because it's not familiar to them. So that's a good place. So we get together, we're happy together. We don't want to leave. The feeling is just like a family. And you could, share story and share the experience or try to get information, from each other and help each other. Tai Chi is make you calm and concentrate and the mind to regulate the heart. We warm up exercise for at least 15 minutes. Then we start the Qigong and then we have Yang style Tai Chi. And we teach a little bit new forms. First thing you go over there, you relax already. And then you forget about your problem, something to help you to reduce your stress from work, from the family. And just take time for yourself to look at the inside of your body. You use most of your time for the outside. But now is the time you look at what yourself need. It's like meditation to cure your body.
That's Astor Lee, and she spoke with our community storytelling project, Hear Here. We'll be recording more stories in Visitation Valley for Hear Here. And to find out how you can share your story, go to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. From big belly laughs to slow-moving Tai Chi, San Francisco has a lot to offer its diverse residents. Poet laureate Alejandro Murguia came to the city back in the 70s, and he fell in love with the Mission District.
One of the charms for me of it was that it was like a small Latin American pueblo with all the different characters that you would find in any Latin American pueblo, from exiled revolutionaries to crazy poets to just the whole spectrum of what it is. And that's why I called it a little Macondo in those days, because it felt just like one of those little towns Garcia Marquez or any Latin American writer would write about.
Alejandro Murguia writes about love, family, and politics. But lately, he's writing a lot about the changes he's seeing around the city. Here, he recites a poem he calls 16th and Valencia.
I saw Jack Michelin on the corner of 16th and Valencia reciting Skinny Dynamite, and he was angry. And the next day, he was dead on the last BART train to Concord, and maybe that's why he was angry. And I met Harold Norris shuffling around in a beaten world, his pockets stuffed with poems only hipsters read. It's a cesspool out here, he sighed, before returning to his room in the Albion Hotel, where angels honeycomb the walls with dreams and the rent is paid with angry poems. And I heard Oscar Seta Acosta's brown buffalo footsteps pounding the Valencia corridor, and he was shouting poetry at the sick junkies nodding with their wasted whores in the lobby of the Hotel Royanne, the mission's finest, and even the furniture was angry. And I joined the waiters at the bus stop, the waitresses, the Norteño trios, the flower sellers, the blind guitarists wailing boleros at a purple sky, the shirtless vagrant vagabond ranting at a parking meter, the spray paint visionary setting fire to the word. And I knew this was the last call. We were tired of living from the scraps of others. We were tired of dying for our own chunk of nothing. And I saw this barrio as a freight train, a crazy Mexican bus careening out of control, a mutiny aboard a battleship, and every porthole filled with anger. And we were going to stay angry, and we were not leaving, not ever leaving el corazón del corazón de la misión. El camino real ends here.
San Francisco's poet laureate Alejandro Murguia will be presenting his book Stray Poems tonight at 7 p.m. at City Lights Bookstore in San Francisco. For more information, visit our website, klw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. Something about you, baby. Keep me from going to somebody else. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Hannah Baba, Julie Kane, Jen Cheehan, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Nina Gensler-Debs, Raisu Sussman, Isabel Angel, Laura Flynn, Charlotte Silver, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, Melanie Young, and Jasmine Lopez. Today's show is produced by Leela Day and engineered by Seth. And today we welcome Julia Scott to the team. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And just a reminder, we couldn't do any of this programming without you. We are listener-supported radio, and we thank you for that support. You're listening to the music of Tea Leaf Green. They'll be playing at Terrapin Crossroads in San Rafael on Friday at 8 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
Thunderstorm is coming. See it through the door. If I get struck by lightning, my heart won't beat anymore. Another word.